You're listening to Rosie on the House.
Come on around back, Arizona homeowners. Welcome to Rosie on the House. It is the fourth Saturday of the month. So it's the Urban Farm Month with Farmer Greg and
lots of food
bearing
to eat.
Gifts.
Lots
bearing
of food
gifts.
To eat.
We've got how many? This is a navel orange.
Navel orange.
This is a perfect roundness. This could pass off for a baseball if it was just a little smaller. It's
yeah.
So perfectly
it's
round.
It's halfway between a baseball and a softball size, which is really nice. And that's a pink car navel, most likely. They are pink inside. I went to a party recently, and I took a big bowl of those, and I had to put a sign on them so that people knew they weren't grapefruits, but they were navel oranges. And, man, there was 50 people there, and that bowl disappeared in no time.
You know what I like about citrus? It smells and tastes the same. Coffee, never as good as it smells. Never.
Right.
Citrus, it's always that good. And we've got this one.
That's
this
a little bit
tangerine?
Smaller one. That is an orange. That's my second favorite orange next to the Cara navel. That is a Trovita orange. The cool thing about the Trovita, it's fairly easy to peel. And it's great for peeling and eating or juicing. So you can do both. Generally, navels, you don't want to juice. You want to just eat them. But the Trovita is really great for that. The only downside to the Trovita is there are a few seeds in it.
That's not a downside. That's fruit.
There you go. Exactly.
That's produce.
Exactly.
Yeah, and these, the big navels, they're real pulpy for juicing, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got just peel
them and eat them.
Your typical lemon here?
Lemon, yeah. It's a Lisbon lemon.
Lisbon, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not quite ripe. You can see that it's still a little bit green, but that's fine. It's perfectly ripe inside, I've found. I had a navel orange fall off of the tree the second week of November, which was like, all right, well, it fell off. I picked it up off the ground, and I cut it open and ate it, and it was still a little bit green, but it was delicious.
Now, could you leave that on the countertop and let it ripen, or if it falls off the tree, it's done and you just got to eat it?
It'll probably ripen a little bit more, you know, not as much though as your other fruits. But and then the other things that are ripe now at the Urban Farmer are basically your citrus in the fruit category. So another one of my favorite ones is the Gold Nugget Mandarin orange, and then we've got Mineola Tangelos and kumquats, you know, those are the ones you eat the skin and the inside. The skin is sweet and the inside's really tart. It's great to cut that up and put that on top of a salad. It's really nice.
I have not tried one.
Oh, man.
I'll have to swing by the Urban Farm with a little basket.
What was I thinking? I didn't bring some of those.
I tried planting one and it didn't work. And I had never tried it again, and I'm not even sure I even noticed or looked for them in the grocery store. But when I looked at planting the citrus and picking the varieties and trying to have something producing all year long, kumquat fell in a gap that I didn't have. And, you know, I mean, I've planted 50 trees, and I'd lost a handful of them.
Yeah, well, that happens. And, you know, we've discovered, and we'll talk a little bit about this next week, but we've discovered the silver bullet of growing fruit trees here in the desert. This is amazing what I've discovered this year. So I'll share that in our segment for next week.
And you just alluded to it. This is one of those random 5-week Saturdays, and we save that fifth Saturday for spontaneous
fun.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And your fruit tree program's coming up. So we're talking edibles. The first half of the program, we've got a gal in that writes cookbooks. Mom knows more about her. She actually has the books. I'm looking forward to learning about her. I haven't done quite all of my topic research for that Saturday yet, but
right?
The first half we're going to talk with Carolyn, cooking the Wild Southwest.
Ooh.
And it's all recipes from the Indians and the Spanish when they were here in the 1600s and what they lived off of that naturally grows here. Then the second
There's
half
so much that grows in the desert. It's amazing. And the second half
is Farmer Greg, and
we're
going to
talk all about our fruit tree program.
The 40 years experience you've had on planting edibles, not necessarily native to our landscape, but that do well in the desert. Because sometimes, you know, you got to go from a jojoba bean to an orange. You got to get an orange in there every now and then.
And that's for next week.
That is for next week. What are we talking about this week?
Oh, my
gosh.
Other
than this wonderful production of produce you've got here.
Well, there's always something to eat at the Urban Farm. So let me actually step back. When I say the urban farm, people all often go on in their head. I watch them, and they're, you know, kind of thinking, oh, farm, acres. I wonder what that's about. And the urban farm is my house. It's near 16th Street and Glendale Avenue. It's a third of an acre. So it's only 80 feet wide and 160 feet deep. And basically what I have done there over the past, I've been there 29 years, is landscaped the yard. So it looks like a nicely landscaped yard, but most everything is edible, or it supports edibles.
Or it's edible to animals.
Or
like you feed your weeds to the chickens in your lawn, and the chickens make the eggs that feed you.
Right. Everything that's produced, and it is a flood irrigated property, so I do have grass still. And so like the grass clippings, they go to the chickens first and they eat whatever they eat. And then the rest of it goes into the compost bin. So everything, the way I've designed the yard is everything gets used on site.
And it's been a learning process. It wasn't like from day one when you moved in, you had this masterpiece plan. You had,
right.
The concept was there.
Yeah.
But working and getting there and trial and error along the way is really what makes this program, when you're on with us, so interesting, just learning and hearing all the different elements and aspects, because you're not one to throw money at this solution either. You're one to work through it.
Yep.
And find a way. I mean, sometimes things cost money, sure, but it's not,
it's not first.
I got to go drop, you know.
Exactly.
$300 on 2 tons of soil over here.
Right. I want you to build your own on your site.
I had time for the $5,000 irrigation system.
No, don't do that. And I actually planted my first garden here in 1974. So when you do the math on that, that was 44 years ago. And I'm not even that old, so.
Congratulations. How many people can pull that off?
Right. Well, you know, back then, I was in the eighth grade then, and I wrote a paper on how we were overfishing the oceans back in the eighth grade, middle 70s. I knew something was up back then, and it just carried forward. I was in technology from 1984 until 2004, for that 20 years. I owned the Apple Authorized Training Center here in town, and ran a software company and had one of the first laser typesetting companies here in town. So I've been an entrepreneur since I was 15, when I started my first business. I used to clean, service, and build fish ponds here in town. But this notion of gardening and growing food in our yard, it's always been really close. And I bought the urban farm 29 years ago. I've lived there over half my life. And it's my place to experiment. And so we do tours there periodically. You'll see some coming up in March and April. And in the tours, we, we get basically walk people through the front yard and the backyard and share what's going on in the space. And often people will get there and it's a bit overwhelming because there's so much going on. I could talk for days about what I do at the urban farm. And I just tell people, listen, take a deep breath. Don't get overwhelmed. Pick one or two things that you are interested in and go do those. Because you're right. My place didn't happen overnight. It happened over 29 years. And if I was going to start again on a project like this, I would probably take 5 years from beginning to end. And what I tell people, when you first get into a space and you want to start converting it to edible, spend at least a year with the space before you make any major changes. Major changes is taking out any big trees, big earthworks, anything like that. You want to really know what's happening in all of the seasons. You know, when it rains really hard, where does the water go? You're going to want to know that. On December 21st, which, hey, we're right here. Go out at noon.
One day later, we can skirt that a little bit,
Exactly. Go out and pay attention to where the sun is at noon. And I think what you'll find is that you have a really long shadow, because the sun is lowest in the sky on December 21st. It's highest in the sky on June 21st. So go back out on June 21st and pay attention to where the sun is at noon, because that'll inform a lot of your decisions.
And sunset is pretty key in that too, because where it sets is completely different from...
Completely different. Yep, exactly.
There's a time where it lines up perfectly, where the light from the sun blocks the eyes from the garage door at the house, but it's only that one certain time of year, right in the early morning, because of the way that the Earth is. Is a 13 degree axis?
Something like that.
Somebody's going to correct us here pretty soon. If we're wrong.
I can point in the sky. I know where the sun is at noon on June 21st, and I know where the sun is at noon on December 21st, just because I paid attention to it. And I study something called permaculture. I like to call permaculture the art and science of working with nature. How do we work in the flow of natural systems? And the first premise of permaculture is observation. Stand back and pay attention.
Now, do you ever use markers in that? If you're in the middle of the yard and we're out there on December, we're going to say 22nd just because we're a day late here, but it's not going to make that big a difference.
Right.
I don't think our margin of error one day on 365 days
is not much.
Just put a five-foot pole in the ground, and when noon hits, put a marker where that shadow is.
Ooh.
Then when June comes, put a marker.
Where is that?
So you could take that same distance anywhere in the yard and know, okay, here in the corner of the yard over here, what's it going to look like in the summer? What's it going to look like in the winter? And marking it that way?
Yeah, that's a great way to do it because that's a good piece of data. You want to know that, especially if you're wanting to plant a garden on the north side of anything. And the north side of your structure, of your wall, is going to get the least amount of sun because of what we just talked about and where the sun is at and the longest shadows. So the north side of a structure or a northern exposure is you're going to be your hardest place to get enough sun to garden.
We're out in the urban farm with Farmer Greg here at Rosie on the House for Saturday of every month. We have the pleasure of Farmer Greg joining us and helping us teach and motivate and educate us on growing and sustaining our own food source.
Thank you.